The story of gay rodeo, I believe, is totally intertwined with the story of the gay rights movement. And to take a journey back along that path, I'm going to do my best to recount the history as I've come to understand from the archival documents and interviews of those I've spoken to who lived it. As we all know, in 1975, a Reno man came up with a crazy idea to hold a gay rodeo as a fundraiser. That rodeo was a huge success, and the National Reno Gay Rodeo was held annually for 10 years. Those rodeos gave birth to the gay rodeo circuit we know today. It was the 70s, and the styles for men were changing. But the romantic image of the cowboy still had a powerful presence in the American culture. No breed of man was thought to be more masculine, in control, and straight. The idea of a gay cowboy was a contradiction in terms. Phil knew that, and he knew the novelty was a sure money maker, and besides, cowboys are hot. To really understand the importance of gay rodeo and, to the gay and lesbian, GLBT people of the era, and its contribution to the gay civil rights, it's useful to look back quite a few years to gain a little bit of perspective. And I will say one thing that's different about this crowd and the crowd I did at the Flamingo Library, a lot of you guys are going to remember these things that I'm getting ready to go through, and a lot of that crowd had we were having to educate. In 1962, Illinois decriminalized homosexual acts between consenting adults. Prior to that, homosexual acts were criminal in all 50 states. Before 1880, laws criminalizing voluntary sodomy were rarely enforced, but then between 1880 and 1920, all states with large cities, except Texas, made oral sex a felony. Arrests increased, and across the nation, police began arresting visibly gay men and women for cross-dressing, disorderly conduct, or loitering with lewd intent. In those days, psychoanalysts equated homosexuality, I don't know what happened there, with mental illness. It was considered a mental illness, and advised aversion therapy and even lobotomies. Public service announcements warned youngsters against predatory homosexuals, and police entrapment was rampant. Between 1946 and 1967, hundreds of LGBT persons were arrested each year for sodomy or attempted sodomy, and thousands for lesser offenses. You could be arrested for cruising, propositioning an undercover policeman or woman, wearing sex-inappropriate clothing, and being present in a gay or lesbian bar during a raid. Newspapers routinely printed the names of those who were arrested. Liquor authorities routinely targeted gay and lesbian bars. They would revoke the liquor licenses, as they were considered disorderly as establishments. Bars that regularly served prostitutes or homosexuals, notice the grouping there, were by definition disorderly. In the law, from California to New York, gay bars were frequently raided and closed. In 1967, the New York Court of Appeals overturned the state law, ruling that allowing gay people to congregate, dance, and or kiss did not render a bar intrinsically disorderly. And that same year, Florida's courts, though, upheld Miami's ordinance, prohibiting liquor licensees to knowingly sell, serve, or allow consumption of alcoholic beverages by any homosexual person, lesbian or pervert, or to knowingly allow two or more persons who are known homosexuals, lesbians, or perverts to remain in their place of business. A little bit different time, huh? It was a dirty secret that the mafia ran most of the gay bars in the country. Continued raid on New York's gay bars catalyzed the famous 1969 Stonewall Riots, widely recognized as the opening salvo of the 70s gay liberation. June 28, 1969, at 1 a.m., the New York City police raided the Greenwich Village mafia-run gay bar called the Stonewall Inn. For the first time, the patrons refused to be allowed to be dragged away in the paddy wagons. It set off a three-day riot that launched the gay rights movement. Just why the Stonewall patrons fought back that one night instead of any other night is everybody's guess, and there's always been speculation. In the New York Times the next day, they speculated that maybe it had to do with the death of Judy Garland the week before. Whatever the reason, gay people's patience had run out. What made the raid of Stonewall Inn unusual is that the gay and lesbian patrons spontaneously fought back, tossing beer cans, brick, and anything else that they could reach at the police officers, who responded by beating many of them and arresting dozens. Begun in 1950, the Mattachine Society was an early homosexual rights advocacy organization. Someone in that organization posted this hand-painted sign calling for calm on a broken-out window of the Stonewall Inn. Regular Stonewall customers, mostly street homeless young people, posed for this picture shortly after the riots. More protests followed in the days after the raid, marking a cultural shift in the time when few people were willing to be publicly identified as homosexuals. In the aftermath of the melee, gays and lesbians left the closets, never to return. At the end of the decade that had witnessed marches on Washington on behalf of civil rights for blacks and protests against the war in Vietnam, gay pride was born. Our time had arrived. A month after Stonewall, the first gay pride march was held. Now, the next thing in the link of gay rodeo and the start of the history of it was, you know, Jose Julio Sarria. Some of you may have heard of him. In the 40s, he was, being a veteran of World War II, entered gay history when he began to cover at work sometimes for his then boyfriend, who was a waiter. And it was at a bar called the Black Cat, and that was on Montgomery Street in San Francisco. And in post-World War II, as a lot of the servicemen were coming home from the war, the word was out, if you went to San Francisco and you were a homosexual, that the city was friendly to you. So thousands and thousands of homosexual men coming out of the military were going into that area. And while Castro was still primarily heterosexual, blue-collar neighborhood, the Black Cat had already developed an international reputation as a gay meeting place. Very, very underground. One day, while Jose served drinks and the pianist was playing Carmen, Sarria began singing arias to the opera. And soon, that was a big hit, and people came there, and his reputation for entertainment and performance was born. The owners and clients, So the Black Cat became the most notorious gay bar in early Castro at that time. Then came the 50s. It was in 1950 when Joseph McCarthy said that President Harry Truman's State Department had been infiltrated by gays, likely even homosexual communists, because as far as he was concerned, all gay people were communists. That kicked off the McCarthy era and the witch hunts in America. In San Francisco, the McCarthy era ushered in a period of intense police harassment of gay people and gay establishments. California's sodomy law was still the law of the land. Gay men and women were arrested on a number of charges used to keep homosexuals in closets and hidden. Against this oppression, Sarria gave the city's gay community hope with a dash of laughter. He was basically very campy and laughed in the face of authority. His impromptu arias would contain lyrics that would warn people of police entrapment schemes if he learned of them. He would secretly telegraph that we're about to be busted. The raid is coming. He also coined some of the first known statements to instill gay pride with such slogans as, there's nothing wrong with being gay, the crime is getting caught. Or, united we stand, and divided they catch us one by one. Sometimes Sarria would lead the bar's patrons down the street with the drag entertainers and to the nearby jail where they were locking up the homosexuals, and they would stand outside and they would serenade the place to make the people inside, you know, feel like they were supported. The Black Cat's fame and Sarria's moral boosting campaigns eventually led the police to attempt to close the bar in 1949. They wanted that place closed. The grounds where it attracted gay people. The owners and the clients, however, sued, and in a decision by the California Supreme Court, they ruled that the bar could not be closed simply because of the clients that it attracted. Oh, that's weird formatting. It's against this background that in 1965, the international court system founded by Jose Seria in San Francisco. Crowned queen of the Beaux Arts in 1964, Seria, stating he was already a queen, proclaimed himself Her Royal Majesty Empress of San Francisco. Jose won the Widow Norton. Seria's assumption of the title of Empress led to the establishment of the imperial court system. The Tavern Guild continued to draw the city's gay community together and began regularly holding events, including the annual drag ball that became a huge event in San Francisco. Eventually, this ball marked the annual election of the citywide empress who succeeded Empress Jose I and the subsequent empresses. The Imperial Court of San Francisco eventually grew to encompass the courts in the cities of the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. And that takes us to the beginning of gay rodeo. In 1975, the Comstock Silver Empire Dollar Court was founded in Reno by Empress of Nevada I, Rex Ann Casino Royale, Queen of Reno I, Keith Ann. Emperor I of Reno, Phil Ragsdale, came up with one of the most creative ideas to raise funds. Ragsdale wanted to keep out the local senior citizens' annual, he wanted to help out the local senior citizens' annual Thanksgiving Day feed. And he thought an amateur rodeo would be a fun way to raise some money and even erase a lot of gay stereotypes. Ragsdale did not find it easy to pull off this event. Coming so close on the heels of Stonewall, it's hard to overstate how audacious this idea was. Phil booked the Wausau County Fairgrounds in Reno for October 2nd. That was the earliest possible date it was available. And the fairgrounds manager was very understanding and willing to work with Phil, but there were many problems that lay ahead. First, when Phil tried to go out and get stock, nobody would rent him stock. When they found out it was a bunch of homos that were doing a rodeo, they refused to rent stock to him. He was rejected 35 times, and then getting closer and closer to the publicized date of the rodeo, he finally made the decision they were just going to go out and buy their own stock. And they did find one person who would sell them some stock. He finally did that the day before the rodeo. The very next day, the livestock arrived. It consisted of 5 cows, 10 calves, and 1 Shetland pony. That's what they ran the first rodeo with. The numerous gay organizations had all been contacted, and everybody gathered up because it's this big campy event that was going to happen. And the other organizations were all... there were agreements for them to run the different concessions, and everybody would make a little bit of money. The first rodeo had one large arena with wild calves and cows running loose. There were no pens. It was total chaos. There was no chutes either, but it was rodeo time. The first year, there were just 3 categories. King of the rodeo for the camp competition. It was king of the rodeo, male. Queen of the Rodeo, female, and Ms. Dusty Spurs, the drag. And those were the awards that they gave for the people that competed in the arena. It was just great fun, and it was a minor success. Ragsdale added several new twists to the 1977 version the second year. He founded the Comstock Gay Rodeo Association, and his rodeo project became known as the National Reno Gay Rodeo. And following the Imperial Court's lead, Ragsdale added the Mr. Miss and Miss National Reno Gay Rodeo Contest, and it was to benefit muscular dystrophy. In 1977, the rodeo was hugely successful. They donated $214 to MDA under the name of Reno Gay Liberation. The National Reno Gay Rodeo became a totally new outlet for the gay community and created a dual party. And emerging gay liberation mixed into a country western party and 24-hour casinos. And as you can see from the poster, you know, dance troupes were big at the time. And one of the things we discussed in our archives committee is how huge dance was to the founding of gay rodeo. And that's something that's dissipated a little bit. But when you look in the early posters and flyers and all that, dance was really the major motivating thing. And in some years, there were over 100 different square dancing and clogging groups appearing at the rodeo. With the exception of a single flyer for the 1979 rodeo, the IGRA Archives Committee has not discovered any information or references to the Reno rodeos or related events that took place in 1978 and 79, and actually 80. And it was only yesterday that I was able to find the first photographs from 1981, which I'm really excited. I spent all day scanning them, getting them in here, because you guys, I don't think anyone's ever seen some of these pictures before. But we know that information exists from 77, 78, 79. Cameras existed. And where you've got thousands of people, people take pictures. So I would inquire for everyone to keep their eyes open. 79 and 80, the categories had changed to all-around cowboy, all-around cowgirls, and Ms. Dusty Spurs. These are the competition categories in the actual rodeo. More women got involved at all levels, including competition. The Mr. and Ms. National Reno Gay Rodeo Contest also went national with feeder contests in some of the big cities, sending in, and really the basis of our royalty concept started forming then. Reno, California, and Utah had presented some of the top contenders for the rodeo contestant events, and the parties surrounding the event had gained a great foothold. 1980. By 1980, we saw the foundation of the Pacific Coast Gay Rodeo Association in California, and they had sent some very talented rodeo contestants to Reno. Interesting thing from the 1980 souvenir program, the cow milking contest was very popular. In keeping with the closeted times, staff members also, if you'll see on the left, were only credited by their first name. It was very common at the time to not use anybody's last name, and people used aliases, because if your name was printed in a gay publication, you could be fired. Texas was the big state in 1981, bringing a host of fans in Texas t-shirts. And these are the new pictures that I have not been shown before. A hot contender for all-around cowboy and Mr. and Mrs. Miss contestants, who, by the way, raised $40,000 that year. Quite a jump. The Miss from Texas won the competition for Miss National Reno Gay Rodeo. 81 was the year of Texas. Look at the grandstands. With San Francisco only a short drive away, the Underground Gay Network spread the word about this party, and the audience in the grandstands grew to thousands. Those who only came for the nightlife swelled the headcount of gays in the city to over several thousand. And the Comstock Gay Rodeo Association incorporated, and that year they began accepting memberships, and membership was $1 a year. So here's a few pictures of competition, which I'm pretty excited about, because most of the early photographs are all black and white. I can't quite see it all on my monitor, but notice the tank top or the sleeveless t-shirt on the contestant. These were some of the local cowboys. They had a little fun. What do you mean? I'm disqualified. These are more random shots. I love these because they're so period. Look at the size of the crowd. It says, in the very first of gay rodeo, there were already lots of men taking their shirts off in the grandstands. There's some lady eye candy. Isn't she pretty? And I've come across quite a few pictures where there's dancing in the arena. So apparently they were doing some exhibition or having fun in the arena. And isn't that sweet? Joseph Sedlak, Phil's lover, took the position of vice president of CGRA and the National Reno Gay Rodeo. He became the national director of the contest for the Mr. Ms. Contest. And he started recruiting local coordinators. Here he is with Casey Jackson from our Hall of Fame. In 1982, Paul Verberg won the poster contest with this iconic image. And we just, about a week ago, purchased the last first run of that poster for the archives. And actually, it's not in this presentation, but this is the 1983 Reno Gay Rodeo poster, which you've also had, we obtained recently for the archives. Colorado was the big association. In 1982, Colorado took the Reno National Gay Rodeo by storm. They were 400 strong, including a mounted drill team and some 43 contestants. Here's more pictures from that rodeo. Guess who that is on top, on the right? You'll recognize her in a minute. Now, this is very chic. This was Charlie's private box. I want to know what you had to do to get in there. And anyone want to take a guess who that is on the right? That's John King. And that was the year that Joan Rivers appeared at the rodeo. She was Grand Marshal, and there were 10,000 spectators in the grandstands when she made her appearance. Interesting little story. You know, Reno wasn't quite sure what to do about the rodeo, because obviously, you know, it's a casino town and they love money. And there was lots of people coming in, but you know, this was still very homophobic time. And in 1982, a sort of pattern of harassment started. There was plans for a steak dinner fundraiser for a local senior citizens center, and it was shut down right before it was supposed to happen by the county health district. They came in, and they claimed that the steaks had been inadequately refrigerated, and they shut the thing down. Well, Phil Ragsdale went out, and they bought new steaks from all the grocery stores, and of course, at a huge expense. And just to stand up to the authorities. And the dinner actually was held very late. And that year, the Mr., Miss, and Ms. contest didn't start until midnight. But it's kind of like the voting disenfranchisement stuff going on now. Everybody stayed because they weren't going to be pushed around by the authorities. And at midnight, there were still thousands of people there, and they were damned if they were going to be pushed away. Here's a picture of part of the Colorado team that year. I like this picture a lot. The future Hall of Famer Casey Jackson was giving bull riding tips to some of the contestants in these pictures. I think I'm missing a slide. This is, I think, maybe John King can tell me. I believe maybe the guy without the shirt is Phil Ragsdale. Can you tell, John? I noticed this same gentleman's in a lot of pictures. He seems to be officiating somehow. And but I do know that it's you certainly wouldn't see a shirtless official there right in front of a bareback bronc at our rodeo today. Here's some more action shots from that year. And notice the bull. Zephyr Howard. Oh, is that who that was? Zephyr Howard. What was his position? Was he?
Well, he was kind of the main judge.
Okay.
But he was very sexually active, and he had a tendency to judge based upon what happened the night previous.
Is that wrong? Notice the bull. They're using a Brahma bull. And The first Charlie's Rodeo ad ran in the 1982 Reno program, or at least the first I've been able to find. And there would be a Charlie's ad in every Reno, IGRA Finals, Arizona, Colorado program from that day on to present. In 1983, due to the success of the rodeo, the event was expanded to 4 days. And the Mr. Miss and Miss National Reno Gay Rodeo contestants, for the first time, they split their money between muscular dystrophy and a gay-related charity of their choice. Now, this is when the AIDS epidemic was starting to really become huge, and most chose the AIDS Foundation. 1983 also saw the largest number of dance groups ever assembled at the gay rodeo, and the grandstands had over 12,000 people. The lack of consistent rules was quite a problem. It kept creating problems, and on June 3rd that year, in 83, the first gay rodeo outside of Reno was held in Colorado. In 83 also, these two ads, I found these, they ran one in the Advocate and one in the Denver Rodeo Program. 1984, let's look at a few pictures from that year. She's pretty. And a few friends were made. This is a great photograph. Look how the resolution. It's the Colorado drill team. Ron Jesser, unfortunately the son's in the wrong position, but Ron Jesser and Lee Kittleson, both very, very prominent and famous contestants in the early years. In 1984, the ninth and final National Reno Gay Rodeo was held in July instead of the usual August dates. They were working to, that was the year of the Olympic Games, which were being staged in Los Angeles. They had to move the date to get out of the way of that. The Reno Rodeo still brought in over 10,000 people to the rodeo grounds and thousands more to Reno for the gambling and nightlife parties. The Gay Indians of America formed their own group, and they attended the rodeos and they performed. Some pictures from 84. There's Colorado. Can somebody tell me who is the gentleman on the far, far right? That's what I thought. Okay. And we see Casey Jackson there and some of the other guys I don't know. A bunch of good-looking guys. Look at that little hottie on the right. Guess who that is? And Wayne Giacchino and David Hill. There's Joseph and Phil. This is a famous picture that people have seen. In 1984, the association reportedly had a major dispute with Washoe County Fairgrounds and the Sands Hotel, which was followed by the seizure of the rodeo books by the IRS. The Comstock Gay Rodeo Association, the National Reno Gay Rodeo were history, but Phil Ragsdale and Joe Sedlak had made a major mark on the history of gay rodeo. That year, the second gay rodeo outside of Reno was held in Texas, and we aren't quite sure of the date. We have been unable to discover that date, but the Golden Gate State Gay Rodeo Association was formed that year, and the Arizona Gay Rodeo Association was formed, and the CGRA mounted drill team was invited to Madison Square Gardens, but when they got there, they were unable to perform. They were not allowed to perform. The 10th Reno Rodeo, scheduled for October 1st through 4th, never happened. In 1985, to fill the void, the International Gay Rodeo Association was formed, with founding members including Colorado, Texas, California, and Arizona. The first IGRA convention was held in Denver that year, where Oklahoma was seated. The IGRA held four rodeos that year. In 1983, Floyd's Long Beach was opened by Al Bell. Al Bell served as GSGRA's first president, and he would play an important role in the development of gay rodeo. The actual opening date of Floyd's is unknown, but this ad appeared in the very first GSGRA rodeo held in LA, March 30, 31. In 1986, three more associations were seated at the annual convention, which was held in Denver that year. Kansas, Missouri, and New Mexico. Arizona also had their first rodeo in January 1986. IGRA staged the first IGRA royalty competition that year, and the winners were Fritz Capone, Gary Oliver, and Jeannie Nelson. No one has been able to precisely recall to me what the drama was, but Gary Oliver was replaced by Larry Brandon shortly after the competition. There was talk of some impropriety with a judge. Maybe it was the same judge from the arena rodeo. And all five rodeos were held that year. So in 1987, IGRA was up to eight associations. Because of the growth in rodeos and to provide contestants with a clear path to earn points, IGRA split itself into two divisions. Now, Al Bell, who I spoke of earlier, he partnered up with Les Cranbill, a cowboy out of Oklahoma, and they opened a second Floyd's in Reno. Al and Les got a group of people in Reno interested in the rodeo, and that year, that year's convention, the Silver State Gay Rodeo Association was seated at the IGRA convention. This put gay rodeo back in Nevada after a three-year hiatus. There were six rodeos that year, including the first IGRA rodeo's finals rodeo, and it was held in San Francisco. Les was also elected president of IGRA that year, and Reno was awarded the 1988 finals. That would be a fateful decision for gay rodeo in Nevada. In 1987, the TGRA rodeo program welcomed to Silver State. And that year started out well. IGRA continued to expand. You can see there the schedule. The Oregon Gay Rodeo Association and the Cowboy State Rodeo Association from Wyoming were seated at the convention. A lot of people don't know that that year, Phil Ragsdale, a.k.a. Sally Slammer, was elected Empress of the Silver Dollar Court. He is listed as a member of Silver State that year. He also received the IGRA President's Award that year at the IGRA convention for his contributions to gay rodeo. There were six rodeos scheduled that year, plus finals in Reno. All of them happened but one. Three rodeos in each division were planned, but the Reno finals never took place. Nevada and gay rodeo had another clash with destiny. Originally scheduled to be held at the Lawyer Events Center in Reno, pictured here, the rodeo's contract with the center was canceled, and court action forced the center to force the center to perform failed. This was the beginning of sort of a harassment and backlash. The contract with a later contract with the private facility in Fallon fell through when the organizers were hit with an injunction to stop the rodeo from being held 2 days before the event. 2 days in court plus a trip to the Nevada Supreme Court failed to stop a homophobic DA who was behind the machinations. Contestants who had horses on the restricted site were threatened at gunpoint, and one of John Beck can tell you this story, and refused access to care for their horses. It was a time of hysteria about AIDS. Blatant discrimination against gays was rampant, and it was a shameful time for Nevada. This is a copy from the 25th anniversary finals program, which goes in quite detail. This is the cover of the finals program that never happened, and there was also posters. Due to finals cancellation, the IGRA board awarded two sets of buckles to the top competitors. Basically, the all-arounds were given in both divisions that year. based on the points that they had coming in. The 1988 finals ad showing the new Reno location, the closure of the rodeo forced Silver State to fold, and the association faded from history in 1989. Floyd's Reno soon closed after the rodeo was shut down and Silver State folded. It would be 8 years before Nevada saw another IGRE rodeo. From 1988 to 1996, there were no IGRE gay rodeos in Nevada. In 1992, seven men hanging out, and I'm sure they were drinking quite a bit, at Badlands Saloon committed to bring gay rodeo back home to the state of Nevada where it all began. It was decided Las Vegas needed to form its own gay rodeo association. That year, the Southern Nevada Gay Rodeo Association was born and gained 50 new members. The name was altered that same year to the Nevada Gay Rodeo Association to represent the entire state. And NGRA took its place as the 13th member delegation of the IGRA convention in Minnesota. In that same year, Phil Ragsdale passed away from HIV/AIDS in Reno. It took 2 years, but finally NGRA produced its first unofficial rodeo event in June 1994 when a Gymkhana was staged at Horseman's Park in Las Vegas. IGRA officials attended, showed strong support to sanction NGRA's first rodeo. On a hot June weekend in 1996, the first Bighorn Rodeo was held, and NGRA has been hosting rodeo events ever since. I attended that first rodeo and was thrilled by what I saw, and that's what sucked me into gay rodeo. I knew I had found a home. I joined NGRA that very weekend and worked on every rodeo since in some capacity. In 1977, we moved the rodeo to March, hoping for better weather. Attendance was almost 800, and we topped 100 contestants. Over the next several years, we would struggle with windy weather and wide swings in temperature. Every event was a crapshot, appropriate for Las Vegas, as we were unable to get weather insurance in those days. That year, one of the grand marshals was a clown, rodeo clown named David Pizzuti, who many of you may know. David was famous and well-loved on the gay rodeo circuit. The following year, we would be paying a different sort of tribute to David as he passed away that year. AIDS was sweeping through our organization. Everyone knew someone who was sick or dying or that had already passed. That year, we suddenly lost founding president and rodeo director Gary LeBay and many others, and it was a scary time. That year, our 98 NGRA royalty team members, DeShannon and Laura Scott, reigned as Miss and Ms. IGRA, respectively. In the fall of 1999, NGRA went to the IGRA convention in Baltimore. We made a bid for convention, and we won. Little did we know what disasters laid ahead. Tom, please, oh, sorry. Let's see. 2000 was the most financially disastrous event in NGRA history. This year, a new event moved into town, which caused the room rates to soar. NASCAR suddenly appeared on our weekend, and they sucked all the oxygen out of all the hotels. All the room rates shot up. To make things worse, it turned cold and cloudy on Friday, and it stayed that way through Saturday, completely wiping out any hope we have for making any income. Las Vegas residents don't like cold weather. 50s cold. 48, forget it. Sunday was still cold and there were no attendees. We were able to run the rodeo events both days, but it was a wet, miserable experience. That rodeo lost over $16,000. Founding member and president and rodeo director Ken Carney was both physically and emotionally exhausted from the experience. He took a hiatus from rodeo, and because of that later health issues, he never returned. In order to regroup and restore our fiscal health, there was no rodeo in 2001, and no one felt good about taking on the risk. After the disastrous rodeo, the association made a determination to take a year off from Bighorn Rodeo to allow us to rebuild our finances and allow us to focus on hosting the convention that fall. We hosted the convention at Alexis Park, and the event went out without a hitch. In 2002, we moved into April in hopes of warmer weather. Our marketing tag was back in action. That year, a Reno-based group made a formal request to NGRA to cede territory so we could form a new rodeo association, so they could form a new rodeo association in Reno Sparks. NGRA agreed, and that year, the High Sierra Rodeo Association, HSRA, was seated at convention. After the success of Bighorn Rodeo 2003, we were all geared up for 2004. Our tagline was, Las Vegas, enough said. In a first for gay rodeo, we had cult model Carl Hardwick along with the DC Cowboys. Little did we know the disaster that loomed ahead. The first day was a rainout, and the Saturday rodeo was canceled. Again, weather insurance was not available to us back then. Unfortunately, the Tuscany Hotel, they saved our bacon by throwing open the ballrooms that weekend on 2 hour notice. We sent all the royalty teams down to throw open the bars, and we moved the rodeo to the hotel. We ran events all day and everything, and it was really quite a remarkable study in the brotherhood of the rodeo, brotherhood and sisterhood, the family of the rodeo, and everybody pitching in to get through it. So that part was pretty good and helped us recover financially somewhat. But when I got to the grounds on Sunday, we realized that a golf cart had been stolen. A lease golf cart, and if those go, you know, about $1,800. That's a hit right there. And we ran pumps in the arena all night trying to dry the arena out, and to no avail. Just as the rodeo was ending on Sunday, we did get the rodeo going. I was starting to feel optimistic that we might break even or even just lose a little bit of money. And that's when I got this phone call that was like a punch in the gut. It was the treasurer calling me to say that his boyfriend had absconded with all the proceeds from Saturday and Sunday. We figured it was about $15,000 in cash. And bottom line, our policies and procedures had not been followed. And I can remember sitting through the trustees meeting. I was rodeo director, and it was like a blur to me. I just got this news right before I sat down. And I can't even remember hearing a single word that happened during that meeting. We put out a wanted poster, and believe it or not, an IGRA member spotted him in Chicago, and then another one spotted him in Oklahoma City. He eventually was caught. We caught him when it was a setup to get him to come back into town, and they were waiting for him at the bus station. He was arrested, and thanks to District Court Judge Joe Bonaventure, who happened to be a personal friend of mine, he got the case. And he says, don't worry about it, I'm going to take care of this guy. So basically, he threw the book at him, and he was forced to have his future pay garnished until we were made whole. And believe it or not, amazingly, although it took a few years, NGRA was eventually paid back for every penny. In 2004, it marked the return of gay rodeo to Reno with High Sierra's first rodeo. A lot of us from NGRA went up to help train the newbies, and the rodeo was very successful. That year on Saturday, in 2005 at our rodeo, a huge dust devil blew up. Everybody looked up like that, and they saw this thing just coming at it. It was like the Wizard of Oz or something. And it almost destroyed our vendor and entertainment area. And that year we had it outside the grass area, and there had all these big light pylons, and several of those were knocked over. And there were people everywhere. It was amazing that no one was injured. That year, High Sierra produced their second and last local rodeo in 2005. That year at Dallas's finals in Dallas, the IGRA officials were treated to an advanced screening of a controversial new movie called Brokeback Mountain. We were all deeply touched by the moving portrayal of two closeted cowboys from the 50s. Many of us could relate. When I returned to Las Vegas, I called Focus Features and was able to arrange a pre-opening party to be hosted by NGRA at Charlie's, Las Vegas, which rodeo legend and bar owner John King had recently opened. The studio sent us a lot of logo merchandise and an oversized movie poster signed by Ang Lee and the cast. We auctioned that for over $1,000. 2006 was the year we decided to test the theory that sex sells. That year we had an adult rodeo. It's Las Vegas, of course. More of our marketing imagery was adult-oriented that year. We brought in the DC Cowboys sexy precision dance team, which wowed the crowds. We also featured Michael Brannon, a popular adult film star who ran meet and greets, sold autographed videos, and other stuff I don't want to talk about. And trust me, sex sells. That year, we had the highest attendance in our history. In 2006, High Sierra hosted IGRA Finals. The event was successful, but the association was losing members, and interest locally was waning. To date, that was the last rodeo held in Reno. High Sierra did not send a trustee this year to represent itself on the IGRA board, so we'll see what the future holds. In 2007, NGRA hired a giant lighted mobile billboard containing a version of the artwork on the left there to promote our rodeo. That billboard paraded down 4th Street in the Heldorado Rodeo, which is a big straight rodeo parade. And it was mostly to cheers and to a few jeers. But we marched there. And also, as well as the Gay Pride Parade, which were both held in downtown Las Vegas. Our sexy star that year was Steve Daigle from the popular reality show Big Brother Season 10. And a lot of you guys know Steve. Steve's openly gay, former champion bull rider, very popular eye candy at the rodeo that year, and he spent a lot of time locked up in the NGRA jail. After years of dodging the heat, NGRA decided to put on its first night rodeo in 2009. Since it wasn't a holiday weekend, we were unable to come up with a schedule to accommodate the usual two-go format. We decided to risk it and go with a one-go Saturday night. We brought in stage lighting and produced a spectacular event. The 2010 rodeo, IGRA produced the World Gay Rodeo Finals in Laughlin, and I had the privilege of serving as rodeo director for that event. In order to focus on a successful event, NGRA took a year off from doing its rodeo in 2010. Many of the contestants, I should have said in 2009, I don't want to use the word boycotted, but there were a lot of the contestants who did not like the idea of a one-go rodeo, and so our contestant count was the lowest in our history, and the attendance numbers were for one night only, but it was a very, very profitable year for us because the grandstands were packed. The locals liked it, and we made money. I was honored as Grand Marshal in 2011, and that year we returned to our traditional two-go format, but this rodeo was hurt by an outbreak of a deadly equine virus just 1 week before our event. Some contestants were told by their boarding facilities if they trailered their horses into Nevada, they would not allow them to be brought back until the outbreak had subsided. This decimated our contestant counts and hurt attendance that year. This year, in 2012, NGRA held its 15th Bighorn Rodeo at Horseman's Park. The hot temperatures hovered around 100 degrees, making me think back to that first June rodeo. Next year, to beat the heat, we're taking another run at a night rodeo concept with a two-go format. NGRA has come a long way since that first hot June rodeo. I was lucky to be along for the ride the whole time. I wouldn't give up those experiences for anything. And we look forward to the future. And that concludes. I do have an observation I'd like to make, though. Attendance at IGRA rodeos across the country has generally been declining. And I believe a lot of that has to do with some of the younger generation gravitating more to the party atmosphere of the prides and the gay days and the ultra clubs now. And there's less need to congregate together to get away from the sense of otherness that happens in the general society. As we are more and more accepted and blended into the society, the really hungering need to be together to get away from discrimination starts to fade. And in a way, because of our success in being integrated into the society, the special need for gay events is declining. And now we have gay characters on TV. They're the most popular characters on TV. Openly gay and lesbian people serving in the military. The president has endorsed gay marriage. We just had electoral victories on gay marriage in several elections. So the special need, I think, for gay events is declining. Despite this, there are charitable causes to rally behind, and there will always be those of us who do gay rodeo for the joy of Western sport and the friendship and camaraderie experienced on the circuit. And I'm proud to be one of those. Thank you. Brian. Thank you.